Alicia Power here from the Hockey Roos, the Australian women's hockey team, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
I'm Simon Mason, ex-Great Britain goalkeeper and managing director of Mercy in Hockey.
Hi, it's Jill Boom, former player of the Belgian national team and player of Raya Racing, and you're listening to Half Court Press podcast.
Coach's Corner is the latest series from the Half Court Press podcast. Here, Teo McLeod chats to a variety of coaches from different sports about what it is they do. We chat about coaching philosophies and techniques, youth development and team preparation, as well as how the individual fits into these concepts. If you're curious about coaching, then this is the podcast for you.
Hi, this is Alison Annan, coach of the Chinese women's hockey team, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Half Court Press podcast. You join us for our coaching specials. Today we have a legend of hockey, one of the great players of the game, as well as a legendary coach across the world. For all of her achievements, I'm sure the greatest of which is being named as one of the six Half Court Press magazine iconic hockey coaches of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Alison Annan. Hello, Alison. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Alison, I'll let you introduce yourself. Can you tell us a bit about who you are and where you're from, please?
I'm an Australian. I come from a small town called Campbelltown in Sydney, Australia. I started playing hockey when I was around 8 or 9, more so because my family had one car and we could only go to one sport, and there was my brother and myself, and so we had to play a sport that we both could participate in, so that happened to be hockey. I had a great passion for hockey. I also did athletics. And at a certain age, chose to carry on my hockey career. Played in the national team, Australian national team, from 1990 through till 2001, when I retired. Moved to Holland in 2000 to gain a little bit more knowledge about playing outside of Australia, learn a new language, just really grow as a person, and I've been there since. Played for hockey club Klein Switzerland in Holland. Coached the national team, the Dutch national team, from 2015 to 2021, and since January 2022, and from May 2022 until now, I'm the head coach of the Chinese women's team, which is a totally new adventure.
Yeah, China's an interesting country, isn't it? I lived in Shenzhen in the south for a while.
Quite near. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and got up to Hong Kong a couple of times to watch the hockey there, which is a decent setup. It's not world class, but how's it? You're based in the north, I think, aren't you?
No, we actually travel with the weather, so we are currently in Yunfu, Guangdong district, this province. So that would be close to where you used to live, I think.
Next door, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So we train there now because of the weather. The conditions here are better than anywhere else in China. Each time that I have come to China, we've trained at a different location. Beijing, Shanghai, Sichuan, Hangzhou, of course, because of the Asian Games. So we get to see a bit of the country and Guangzhou, Guangdong district. So, you know, it's quite interesting to, you know, they've got fantastic facilities here in every single province, which is extraordinary. So we just go where the weather's the best to train, which is really quite great.
There were some pro league games over in China. At the start of the pro league was traditionally in China. And I was looking into getting some tickets and going over there. And it was based, I think, just north of Beijing. And it was like a day's travel.
Changzhou. Yeah, that was in Changzhou. Changzhou is from Shanghai to, in the bus, it's about 3.5 hours. Yeah.
Massive country. So I just went to Hong Kong, watched some of their league games and a couple of international matches, but not quite the same as pro league standards. But so how long have you been coaching?
really started coaching from a young age, living in Campbelltown. We had a Campbelltown club competition, played on grass. So for me to grow as a player and a player, I had to move to the Sydney competition. I played in that competition and had always said that I would go back to Campbelltown and create a team with my Campbelltown coach to play in the Sydney competition. And I think I was 19 when we did that, 19, 20, when I started really saying, we created a club, Kaizen. We played in the Sydney competition, and I was player coach from I think the age of 20, 21, really, after the Atlanta Olympics. So I've always been coaching. My Campbelltown coach, John Robinson, was the person who really, every time I was back in Campbelltown, I was doing coaching clinics and learning to explain and teach. He was a teacher himself. So I guess from a young age, I've really been coaching. I've always thought that, I love the sport, that's one thing, but I had the opportunity to be coached by some really special people. And at a young age, it came at a time when I needed to be guided and coached. And I decided quite early that I wanted to put back into the sport what I got out of it. And that led me, of course, to coaching.
Now, you are one of these unique players where you've had a very, very successful playing career and maybe an equally successful coaching career. Could you maybe list some of your sort of great successes for us? For those who don't know who you are so well, sort of a non-hockey fan base for the podcast.
Or the younger generation. Oh look, I played in three Olympic Games. Paris will be my fourth Olympic Games as a staff member, three as a head coach, and one as a manager slash assistant. I've medaled as a coach and a player in of the six, well, of the five that I've competed in, I've been to four medals. No, six. I'll be going to my seventh. That's wrong. I'll be going to my seventh now. Barcelona, we didn't medal. Sydney and Atlanta and Sydney was gold. Athens was silver. Rio silver and Tokyo gold. So I've been able to be part of some great teams that have, led to some great successes.
You also coached Holland to the World Cup in my hometown.
Yes. Played myself in two World Cups, Dublin and where was the other? Oh, Utrecht in Holland, and where we both times won gold. And in London, coached the Dutch team to a win also.
What do you enjoy about coaching?
Coaching is so diverse. It's not just about the tactical or the technical aspect. It's about one, sharing your knowledge as a person, as a player, as a coach. It's about trying to assist or support those people who want to be the best that they can be. There's nothing more satisfying or exciting than to see players grow as players, but also as people. And that's what I really like about it. And when I played, I used to wonder what the coaches did, all day. And I've actually quite learned that playing is really quite easy. The coaching part is extremely difficult and time consuming. And you're always trying to find new ways to do things and teach players different things or different ways to teach players things. So, it's an adventure, and no one day is the same.
The Half Court Press is on social media. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel.
Moving into into the coaching section of our podcast, get into the nitty-gritty of it. What do you see as your role as a hockey coach, and what are the important qualities of a hockey coach?
Well, I guess with any coach, not just a hockey coach, is to provide an environment where the players can grow, learn, is one of course, the most important things as a coach. Provide an environment where failure is okay. It's okay to fail. Failure is part of the process, and that's one of the biggest roles, I guess, as a coach, is to ensure that the environment that you provide them is one of which they can fail, which will then lead to success. And I think that would probably be one of the most important things that I would say.
I coach a lot of kids, and you see them, 12, 13-year-olds, very, very nervous about making mistakes. I did it wrong, almost to them being frozen. A few times, like, if you don't make a mistake, I can't coach. So please let me do my job.
Yeah. So, well, I guess there's so many people. We're very much inclined to coach to a result. And, of course, the higher up you get, results count. If we didn't qualify for the Olympic Games as China, I wouldn't have a job today. No, results count. But when you're developing, there is a margin of error. There is a margin where you will fail in different periods of the year. We will expect you to fail. And, when you're young, you get told too much how to do things and what to do instead of playing with your instinct. You should hold the stick this way and you should hit that way, and everyone's different. And failure is in the smallest corner. And if we continually, we shoot wide, but it's not good to shoot wide. Well, did you get a shot at goal? Yes, I did. Well, that's good. That's positive. The failure, how are we going to do that? The next thing well. How do we get it on goal? So it's all about breaking things down so that children realize that, it's okay to fail. And failure, of course, has different depths. You do have to learn from your errors and learn from your mistakes. That's part of also learning. But having the environment to be able to do so is really important.
I'm keen to sort of explore this wider conversation. What are the important philosophies and principles to put across in your sports? How do you express yourself, and how do you work within your coaching environment?
For me, I've been in three different cultures, and every culture has a different way, and different. It's just different. I can't coach the Chinese team as I coach the Australian team, and the Dutch team, and the Australian culture is also very different. So it's about finding, there's certain principles that you want to abide to as a coach. You want to be clear. You want to be fair, but fair is for everyone very different. What might be good for one will not be good for another. You want to provide an environment, of course, what I said, where you're able to fail. So that's also, that's a philosophy. You want it to be fun. You want them to enjoy what they're doing. And, I like to joke around a lot as a coach, because I think that, that releases a bit of the pressure. So for me, being very clear, having an environment, creating an environment for the mistakes, ensure that it's fun, and it provide growth, provide information, provide challenges for the players also to grow in.
May I ask a little sideways question, which I hadn't thought of before? When I was in China, I came across... there was a communication style that was described to me by a local lad that I was working with as when communicating with authority, like your line manager or your employer, you have to sort of talk without speaking. It's very deferential. If your boss is doing something wrong, it's expected you don't call it out directly.
Yeah, that is, I guess that's dependent on the environment that you're in. One of the very first things that I was told is, they don't like, in hierarchy, the person above you doesn't like to be called out wrong. They don't like to be told that they're wrong, or you don't go into discussion with them. I guess that's certainly something that you're aware of here that doesn't take away from having the discussion with the hierarchy. Of course, me as a coach, I'm seen as a hierarchy for the players. We open a lot of discussion up. We have feedback for us as coaches. They were tentative to give us feedback because of this, what you mentioned. But they're open with us. They're open with me. And if you can't tell me what I can improve, then I can't be the best coach I can be for them. And they understand that.
This feeds nicely into the next question of how would you describe your coaching style and how this compares to other coaches?
Well, I guess I don't know so much about how other coaches coach, so I couldn't really compare that of other my colleague coaches. I would like to think that I do give them room to make errors. I can be quite direct. I also care a lot about my players. You know, I really, them to be better people is more important to me than to be a better player. You have one body, one person, and that's the most important thing. I will, you know, I never lose sight of that. I like to challenge my players. I'm very challenging. And I like to, you know, I really like to try and have some fun with the players and create an environment where you can laugh and you can enjoy yourself. I think I'm tactically very strong. I really enjoy creating different skills and drills for our sessions. You know, I really love being on the field and coaching, you know, giving training. You know, that's the difference between a trainer and a coach. There is a big difference, you know, and I like training.
Yeah, I suppose it is a big thing, isn't it? A coach and a manager. It's a big thing in English football. You know, mm-hmm. Until recently, directors of hockey or all that sort of stuff, the manager was in charge of everything. But that's a huge amount of work for one person to do.
Incredible amount, you know, and particularly in, you know, and I experienced that now here in China is, you know, I don't have a team manager. So, you know, there's a whole load of work that I have to do, and that's more a management position than a coach, but I'm also expected to coach and train. So, you know, I guess yeah, they are absolutely different roles and positions in a team.
So more on the training aspects, what are the processes of coaching the group or a team compared to the individual?
In theory, not so much, because you can do both at the same time. I guess, you know, I really truly believe that one thing that's lacking in our sport in general and also in youth development is the focus on basic skills. I start every single training session with a passing drill. I think that, you know, that's the 80%, 90% of our game is passing, receiving in some shape or form, you know, and that needs to be, you do that faster than any other team and at a higher speed, then, you know, you probably get more chances than the opposition. So, you know, one of the things is in the training for the team, you're, you know, maybe making a passing drill that is a pattern of play. And individually, you're coaching players in assisting them with, you know, positioning of the ball when they're receiving it. Are they looking ahead? Reminding them of their targets in the training. So, you know, I really try and combine the two together, individual development and team development at the same time within the drills that we do, which means lesser time on the field.
Now, it could be possibly argued that you are the top hockey coach currently working in the sport, definitely one of the most successful. How do you improve as a coach?
You know, for me, every day is a lesson. And, you know, my goal is to learn something new every single day, whether that be, you know, I'm learning Chinese now to be able to have converse with the players, you know, to give training and not need a translator. That gives me a better understanding of them, a better understanding of the culture, it's about learning, it's about growing, but it's also about, as coaches, sometimes we get caught up too much in overcomplicating things. You know, I'm a very simple coach. I simplify things. I try and things look at things very simply. And we can overcomplicate things as a coach. And sometimes, you know, it's maybe necessary to go further in depth, but a 15-minute meeting before a game for the attack and the 15-minute for the opposition and a 15-minute meeting for our game is more than enough. We don't do extensive meetings because all of that work should have been done beforehand and also in game, in trainings. So I guess I'm learning all the time different new methods to simplify things, to be better understood. That's my goal every day. Learn, grow. Yeah.
Continuous development.
Absolutely.
I remember hearing a quote from a men's football coach years ago, Marcello Lippi. And he was like the great football coach up until the 1990s, I think, you know, in his 70s. Won the European Cup, won the World Cup with Italy, all this sort of stuff. And he was saying, a good coach never stops learning. And if he can say that as possibly the greatest living football coach at the time, in his 70s.
And, you know, one of the biggest things is often as a coach, you think you're expected to know everything. The player will come to you with a question that you sometimes may not know the answer to. And it's okay to say, I don't know, and go and find the answer. That's also growth. That's also learning. You know, I never thought about that. I'll have a think about it. Or, you know, oh, good thought, good point. Utilize those around you also to grow and learn.
I suppose it's developing a culture of improvement, isn't it? And if the FIH Coach of the Year can keep learning, then so can the rest of us.
The Half Court Press is a multi-sport media outlet. You can check out our articles, opinion pieces, and PDF magazines on our website, www.halfcourtpressmagazine.com.
Moving on to the next section, coaching the team versus the individual players. Now, in this series, this is a bit more tailored towards you, this section, but it's a little bit different to the other episodes that we've had in this series. How do you prepare a team and what training methods do you use? Now, what I'm hoping for is a Half Court Press exclusive here, don't tell me all your secrets, but anything would be nice.
Well, of course, in an Olympic year, I can't be telling you too much.
What are your short core routines?
Look, you know, I endeavour not to train longer than an hour and three quarter at one time. I think that's, long enough. We endeavour not to have to do additional fitness through the week because it's all done in training. These are, of course, endeavours. So our training is based on, you know, the amount of GPS meters needed to be run in a game, and that has to be implemented into training drills with stick and ball. We have no more than three or four focus points per training, which means, you know, and they could be focus points that will stay for a month, 2 months, to focus on certain areas of the game where we say this is needed for improvement. We do different training loads through the week. So we have specified training loads throughout the week, which allows us to do diverse, different types of training throughout the week. You know, and one might be an extremely heavy session, and the other one might be one, of course, with just set skills. But the set skills and the training, the heavier load training, still carry the same focus points. You know, that's pretty much it. It's not all that complicated. Deciding what the focus points are is more complicated than the training structure itself.
Is that set purely by you? The ideas that you're trying to put across, is that decided purely by you? Do you have a chat with the federation? Do you have a chat with your assistant coaches?
About the focus points?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a continual discussion, and we'll look at, we have a document where we add points in for different areas at the beginning of the year, and we'll add all of these different, so we might have, technically we want to do these things, tactically we want to do this, physically this, in different, in all aspects of the game, we have different topics. And we fill in what we think as each coach that needs to be on that list, and then we prioritize. And some of them, and in the priority, you might have 10 things in a year that you might want to say, okay, this is important this year. And particularly this year, it's the choice, will this cost us time or will this win us a medal? So the priority, it narrows down to, is this just something to fill in time, or is this something that we, will really help us win a medal?
So
And we do that together.
that's a chat with your coaches.
Yeah.
Rick Charlesworth, I know he was helping you out during the World Cup.
He's my assistant, yes.
Another one of the iconic hockey coaches on the Half Court Press magazine article. Yes, I think I used the line of a human being properly fulfilling his potential. He's done everything, hasn't he, Rick Charlesworth?
He has done a lot, yes.
Yeah. So I suppose this question leads on to the next one a little bit. How do you prepare your teams or your team in the short term and the long term for competition? Short term games, I suppose, is like what I suppose winning a match or a playoff, and long term is how do we get to the World Cup final, or the Olympic final?
Part of short-term goals is self-reflection and self-regulation, and we have the players are divided into two groups. Each have a coach of the week or coach of the 2 weeks. Each day they reflect on their training sessions and write down what they've done well, what they didn't do so well, and what they want to change. That they do that every day. They talk about that with their coaches of the week. And once a week, the players send me their total list. So I get a weekly report from the players and I'm able to give feedback on that. So they get feedback from me as a head coach, and also one-on-one meetings with their coach of the week, which means that the short-term goals, they're quite vivid for them. They're very clear in their mind and they're able to focus on that. The long-term goals we discuss, this is what we want to achieve. When we started, there was one goal, and that was to win the Asian Games. The team hadn't done it in 13 years or 14 years or so. And it was important for the qualifications for the Olympic Games. That had to be a clear goal. And everything we did was for that one goal. You can't have the one without the other. So you can't have your daily, short-term goals without having a long-term focus and goal. So, we combine those two. And I think the self-regulation for particularly this team is incredibly important. You don't just train, you train and you reflect. And that has been part of the success of this team. Hi, this is Alison Annan, coach of the Chinese women's hockey team, and you're listening to the Half Court Press podcast.
What training methods do you use to train and improve the individual? What are the variables in coaching the individual, and how do you then relate this back towards the team dynamic?
It's when you get to this level, individually, it's all about knowing what their targets are and reminding the players whilst they're on the field of those targets. If they do something well that you've spoken about, acknowledge that they've done it well to, increase their confidence. Remind, sometimes you really have to remind them, and that's the individual development that you do most of the time. Of course, you have your corners and your specific skills that you do, but it's individual development isn't something that you don't do, and it's something that you do all the time. And if you get it right, individual development leads to team development. If every single player improves, the team will improve, particularly if the individual goals are intertwined with each other.
suppose that's leading back to what you're saying a minute ago about picking your team focuses and so on. It's having that broader picture. Weakest member of the team, that so on and so forth. That old cliche as well. It's
Well, you never have really, you never really have a weakest member of a team, because every person in the team can do something that someone else can't. Now, someone might have be more involved and have more contact moments in the game, but every single player on the field can do something that someone else can't. And if that is the foundation, there is no weaker player.
That's a nice way of approaching it. I've never thought of that.
The idea is to find, to find the strengths in every player. And of course, we select players, which is different to club systems, but we select players that would fit in with each other. And, the strongest teams are the teams that have the ability to acknowledge the strengths of each other and utilize those, which means no one is weak.
Sorry to bring it back to football again, but I remember the late great Sir Alf Ramsay, the World Cup winning England football manager. He picked Jackie Charlton at centre back, going next to Bobby Moore, the legendary Bobby Moore. Apparently, he turned around to him once and went, "I've not picked you because you're the best player. You're not the best centre back in England. I picked you because of what you bring." He was the best partner for Bobby Moore, presumably.
Yeah, but you don't, I mean, that's there's this ideal that you have to have the very, very best players to have the greatest team. That is not the case. There are four different types of players on the field. If you have all of the same type of player, you won't win a game, you won't win games. You need all different four different types of players. And that's about balancing the team and everyone knowing what their role is within that team.
Can I ask what the four different types of players?
I knew you'd ask. You have structured players, so players that have the ability to form a structure and identify when the structure's not well, not going well. You have creative players; they're the game changers, players that can change the game. A lot of players in the team want to be game changers. When they get the ball, they want to win, but they're not. You can't have in a team on when you have 11 against 11, you can't have more than one or two on the field at one time. You have supporting players, just players that are just, they know their role and they're just there to do, and it's, this is the most important group because, probably 85% of your team is based on these players, these support, supporting players. And supporting's made, I've done this all in Dutch and Chinese, of course, so I'm just trying to find the right English word for it. But it's a player who, serviced, a service player. You play your if you're a defender, you just defend the ball. That's your first task.
I think the French call them water carriers.
No, that's not it. No, it's not. It's the most important player, right? So it's the player that they're the players that share actually only responsibility is to do what you're good at. Now, a structured player has a responsibility to do what you're good at, but also identify the structure, very much tactically very strong. A creative player is a game changer, a player who's very creative, who can change the game at, and you have the connecting players, players who connect all the dots, who connect the three together. They're more sort of your mid player who really can. Has good vision, can transfer the ball quite well, a really high spatial awareness.
Where was Arthur van Doorn? Would Arthur van Doorn, would he be a creative player or a connecting player?
He is not a connecting player. He would be a creative player. Yeah.
He's basically a deep lying playmaker, isn't he?
He would be in a team that I coach. He would absolutely be a creative player, and also and you know a creative player. You also kind of give permission to be out of position, sort of thing,
Where would a goalkeeper fit in?
Structure or service, depending on their knowledge of the game, but mostly service. You've got three things to do: stop the ball, stop the stoppables, and make sure you're ready for the help put people into position.
Yeah, I'm a goalie. I was trying to get into creative there, but I don't. It was a long hope.
Yeah, well, you don't want your goalkeeper to be too creative. A lot of the time players, because they're quite skillful, think they're creative, want to be creative players. They are absolutely creative. That doesn't mean that they don't have permission to be creative, but it means that they're, we don't want everyone when it's 1-1 or 1-0 down to be wanting to win the game for the team. Just puts people into a certain structure.
As you were describing some of those roles, in my head, I was trying to picture individual players, but can some of the players have more than one role? Can a service player also be a structure player at different points of the game?
Yes, you can be different. You can be in two different positions, but primarily it won't mean that someone who's a creative player can't be a structure player of a or a service player. It's just more so that you want to make sure that you've got the right balance.
How do we communicate with different personalities? Do you change your approach to suit individuals?
Well, you have to, that's it's and the you know we used there used to be the saying you have to treat everyone the same, but you can't because not everyone is the same. You want the same guidelines, but there are certain moments that you do change the way you communicate with different players, absolutely, and certain personalities. There might be players that are very easily turned off by direct communication, so that doesn't work with them. Some are saying, you're not being direct enough, so you because they're a little bit harder on themselves. So there's certainly some people may not understand the game because you also have different learning styles, right? So if someone's learns better visually, you'll have to show them visually. Someone might learn by writing it down, so you'll have to show them on paper. So there's certainly different ways that you have to make sure that you are understood and that you understand each other. Absolutely.
How do you create a winning environment?
Well, I mean, the first thing is by creating the environment where mistakes are allowed. And if you create that environment, you're pretty much winning every single day. A win is a moment. Ah, okay, now I've got it. I understand. That's a win. Winning is not just about, podium coming first. At the higher level, that's where it's, that in the end, that's what we all want. But there's 12 teams going to the Olympics. Only three will win a medal. Winning is something that just doesn't happen once a year, but it has to happen every day. You have to learn to win. So every single day that you fail or you will grow and you will learn, and that is a winning moment. And especially with kids and children in youth development, every single time you're on the field, there has to be a moment that you're winning. And that can be, I understand what you're saying, that's a win. I've enjoyed myself, that's a win. And if you create that environment, then you create a winning environment. Because I want to do it again. And again, and again, and again. And if you're winning continuously, then that might become a habit.
The Half Court Press is on social media. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, X, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel.
As we begin to wind up, who or what inspired you to go into coaching?
Like I said earlier, I have had some extraordinary people in my life who created an environment for me to grow and to become the person I am today. And those people, they're not big names in the sport, but they're very big names in my life who, if not for them, I wouldn't be where I was today. And, those are the people who I learn a lot from. And there's a lot of people that I've come across in my life that I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. So I, that's there's things that you learn along the way where you say, okay, I don't want to be that coach. And that, so every time I've had someone in my life, you take away those things that you think, okay, I really like that. I want to use that, and I want to, and that's how you become kind of unique in yourself. From my third grade teacher to one of my first grade coaches to, of course, to Rick, and all of my national coaches that I've had and my state coaches, every single one of them have been a very important person in my career. My partner at home has made me a better coach. There's so many people. My children, my children teach me every single day. Those are the people that really inspire you as a coach.
Well, it's the benefits of having a healthy family, isn't it? It's people who give you strength and a platform to go from.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who are your favorite coaches of all time?
No, look, like I said, all those people that I've just mentioned, John Robinson, Mick Kell, Beth Shea, Judy Lang, Greg Corbin, Loretta Dorman, Kim Small. There's so many names. Rick Charlesworth, Frank Murray, Bob Haig, Chris Spice. There's so many in there. Each and every one of them gave me something that helps me today. There is no one favorite.
So this is, I'm trying to celebrate coaches. In football, rugby, cricket, I think we celebrate the icons of the sport a lot. Less isn't known about the great iconic people in amongst hockey fans, I think. Think back to when you were a player. Who were the best coaches that trained you as a player?
Every single person I just named, they were all coaches, my coaches in the past. And they're not iconic for maybe every other person in hockey, but I'm absolutely certain that every person that I just named changed someone's life in their career.
I read one of Rick Charlesworth's books, Unprecedented Success. I mean, he was an absolute. I think he described once having a bronze medal as a failure in a World Cup or Olympic Games. I don't remember which one it was. But yeah.
Olympics. He talks about that still today.
So, exceedingly high levels for that guy. Who have been the best coaches that you've coached with?
Joost Bitterling comes to mind. Joost is he was one of my assistants with the men's from Amsterdam. He was my analyst with the Dutch team. A very, very knowledgeable man, incredibly knowledgeable, hardworking, very good person. Rick, very challenging as to have as an assistant. Coached with Albert Cees, Maneschijn, my assistant with the Dutch team. Fantastic person, very funny. Tactically very, very strong. Those three come to mind. Mostly Dutch people, because I haven't really coached in Australia in the sense that I was a player coach myself. So I would say those three would be those that I would name who I have coached with, definitely.
Who are your favourite coaches currently working in hockey or other sports?
Oh, look, I'm a fan of Guardiola. I like the way he coaches. I like the passion that he coaches. My partner was works as the manager of the Cruyff organization, so Johan Cruyff organization. She used to be his manager, and Guardiola is one of his students. So I see a lot in Guardiola that Johan used to talk about. He would certainly be one of my favorite coaches of all time, Johan Cruyff. Extremely knowledgeable, but also creative in thought. Phil Jackson is someone who comes to mind with the basketball in America. He was able to create a team from the Bulls that extraordinary and in an extraordinary time. I think that's really important. In hockey, every single female coach, I think, are wonderful. I think that, I really like to see women coaching, and the fact that their coaching is, for me, fantastic, and I admire that a lot.
Alison Annan, head coach of the Chinese national team, hockey coach extraordinaire, FIH coach of the year as well. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem at all. My welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
This has been a Half Court Press production by Teo McLeod. If you've enjoyed this show, then please leave us a rating and a review wherever you listen to your podcasts and on Facebook.